Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
We want to really just a short review. We've been looking the last few podcasts at two general events, really fluid events that are continuing to take place these days. And one is really what I would refer to as saber rattling or war drums pounding out in the Eastern Mediterranean. And this could be what Jesus spoke of when in Matthew 24 and other gospel sections where he spoke of rumors of wars, wars and rumors of wars before he returned. Or, of course, this could also be stage setting for a much bigger event, which the scripture talks about in Ezekiel 38 and chapter 39. Now, I really referred to last week's, the title of the topic is Black Gold Matters and Natural Gas, because that's what's so important to so many countries now in the Middle East, I mean in the Eastern Mediterranean, near the Middle East. And anyway, this general event, this fluid event taking place right now, is also, there's an equal interesting event taking place, and that is that peace is breaking out all over the place between Israel and the oil-rich Muslim Gulf states, several of them. And they're just kind of falling in place like dominoes. It's very, very fascinating. I would say unprecedented, but Israel has made peace treaties, of course, with Jordan and Egypt in the past. But this is new developments, you know, not since those earlier wars in Israel after they had come back into the land. Do you find this break in the tension somewhat with some of these Muslim countries? They are small, but they are significant in terms of the fact that they want to come together with Israel, since Muslim countries and Israel don't mix, right? There's never been, no love lost, as they say, between Islam and Israel. But anyway, so we've been looking at these two topics, these free-flowing topics here, and I want to concentrate on the first one tonight, but remember what the scripture says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 3, concerning peace, and I believe this is concerning peace in the Middle East, and peace worldwide, actually, when the Antichrist comes, because he'll come on a flat, false platform of peace. 1 Thessalonians 5, 3 says, "For when they shall say, peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." The Antichrist will use peace to deceive many. And so I think it's very significant, these peace treaties that are breaking out, because ultimately the Antichrist will make a big treaty himself with Israel. But that's not, you know, what our topic is tonight. I just wanted to throw that in. So last week, I think I ended the podcast, I said, be with us next week, you know, and it kind of reminded me of when I was a child and I'd go to the movie theaters and I would watch these exciting Westerns or other programs, and they called them serials because each one would leave you wanting more. Each segment would leave you in a cliffhanger situation, and then the announcer would say, "Be with us next week," you know, and for the, you know, that was the catch, that was the hook to get you back into the theater the next week. You know, only this is reality, and it's even more of a cliffhanger because we really don't know what's coming down the road, and some of you may not even be aware of some of these events, at least the ones in the Eastern Mediterranean, which we're going to continue to look at tonight. I think probably most people have heard somewhat about these peace treaties, although the political opponents of President Trump have tried to just dismiss this significance of all of these things that are happening. So, you know, let's continue to look at some of the players involved in these rumors of wars or this possible stage setting for Ezekiel 38 and 39, which, of course, we know that Russia is going to be leading this coalition, this invading coalition, And they're going. The question is, you know, are you going to take a spoil, Russia? Why are you doing what you're doing there? And yes, indeed, they are going to be taking a spoil of many of the riches that are in Israel, of which I believe, of course, the natural gas and other things that are there. So this could be a rumor of war, or this could be part of the stage setting when you consider everything else that's taking place. So many different prophetic events that are being fulfilled as all the prophetic pieces of the puzzle are coming together. So we want to look at some more of these articles, which you may have, which you may not have read, because they are coming out of Middle Eastern or European countries, mostly the things that I'll be sharing tonight. So the first one we want to look at, this is from the Israel Unwired site. Mitcha Geffen wrote this, and this is September 3rd, 2020. Greece mobilizes forces as tensions with Turkey rise. Well, of course, Turkey is one of the parties that will be in the Ezekiel invasion coalition. It says when Bibi Netanyahu formed an Eastern Mediterranean alliance with Greece and Cyprus, the Turkish leadership took notice. Out of the three countries, Israel is by far the strongest power, and with it on board, any Turkish aggression risks bringing Israel into the fray. The current tensions beginning to boil in is Turkey's push towards breaking out of what is it sees as an increasingly isolated position. In some ways, Israel's peace deal with the UAE, United Arab Emirates, bringing an alternate source of oil plays into Turkey's insecurity. However, you know, Turkey does not have much oil of its own, you know, in their landmass there in their country. However, Turkey's biggest concern is the strengthening of Cyprus and Greece's ability to control their movement and gas drilling in the Eastern Mediterranean. This will put them in firm control of what Turkey considers a strategically important area. How will Israel be involved? If there is war between Greece and Turkey, then most observers expect some sort of Israeli participation. Erdogan, of course, that's the leader of Turkey, is a nemesis of both, and if he begins to attack Greece, he will make a move to come after Israel as well. If that happens, then things will spiral out of control quickly. So there's an interesting article. Now here's another. This is Greece, Cyprus, Israel sign the Tripartite Military Cooperation Program for 2021. This is from September 9th, 2020. In the presence of the chief of the Greek National Defense General Staff, General Konstantinos Floris, and the heads of the military delegations of Cyprus and Israel, the program of tripartite military cooperation between Greece, Cyprus, and Israel for 2021 was signed on Tuesday. According to an announcement issued by the Hellenic National Defense General Staff, a meeting was held at the Ministry of National Defense between the Greek, Cyprus, Cypriot, Israeli delegations. With the signing of this program, as pointed out in the announcement, the military cooperation between the armed forces of the three countries is further enhanced by joint exercises and operational activities. Now, a Facebook friend made these comments. Israel, Greece, and Cyprus signing a defense agreement is huge in light of Bible prophecy. Greece and Cyprus are EU, European Union members, and this agreement is tightening Israel's connection to the EU. It is also keeping the spotlight on the Eastern Mediterranean region's need for peace and security as Turkey seeks to threaten Greece with war. This whole issue is over gas and oil energy sources in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea that Turkey wants to take control of. And as I mentioned in an earlier podcast, Turkey and Greece are very big adversaries historically and, you know, and presently. I've been to both countries. I've been to Turkey twice and Greece once, and no question that they really hate each other. Now, the next article, this is a shortened article, so I'm just reading part of it, but this is from actually, I don't know exactly the source. This was in the local newspaper, and but anyway, Erdogan raises rhetoric in Greece standoff in the Mediterranean. This is September 7th, 2020. Turkish President Erdogan on Saturday warned Greece to enter talks over disputed Eastern Mediterranean territorial claims or face the consequences. They're either going to understand the language of politics and diplomacy or in the field. With painful experiences, he said, at a hospital's opening ceremony in Istanbul. Ankara, which is the capital of Turkey, I believe, is facing off against Greece and Cyprus over oil and gas exploration rights in the Eastern Mediterranean. All sides have deployed naval and air forces to assert their claims. And so we'll see a little bit more about that. But first of all, I want to move to an article that's from August 27th, 2020, from BESA, B-E-S-A, the Besser Center Perspectives by Dr. Edie Cohen. Why did Erdogan convert Hagia Sophia into a mosque? And Hagia Sophia, of course, was a Orthodox church that was, well, you know, that an ancient Orthodox church that was still in Turkey. Erdogan recently converted Hagia Sophia from a museum into a mosque, a decision that apparently involved no consultations and was executed swiftly after a surprise announcement. What were Erdogan's true motivations in taking this provocative step? And really, Erdogan's middle name ought to be provocative, I think. You just watch this guy. It's something else. Hagia Sophia, which means holy wisdom in Latin, was built in the 4th century by a Byzantine church, or as a Byzantine church. It was just converted into a mosque following a decision by the Turkish court and final confirmation of the Turkish president. Many saw the decision as anti-Christian, but it was intended first and foremost to please Arab Muslims. Erdogan wishes to establish himself as the most worthy leader to stand at the head of the Sunni Muslim world. He is careful to display his religiosity, and his wife always appears in modest attire with a hijab, you know, covering her head. He regularly quotes verses from the Quran in his speeches and frequently prays in public. Erdogan has always seen himself as the leader of the Muslim Ummah, a collective term for all Muslims everywhere. He seeks to regain the glory of the Ottoman Empire, whose cherished conquests have parallels in present Turkish actions. And here's a list of them. Turkey's occupation of northern Cyprus, the recent arrival of Turkish fighters in Libya, invasions by the Turkish, Libya, by the way, is another one of the countries that will be involved in the invasion of Israel in Ezekiel 38 and 39. Invasions by the Turkish army of Syrian territory and occupation of Kurdish towns. Also, I remember that the Turks really hated the Kurdish. They talked about that when I visited there. They're just a real hatred. Tacit support for ISIS forces, absorption into Turkey of thousands of Egyptian activists from the Muslim Brotherhood and granting them refugee status in Turkey, taking steps to gain control of large areas in the region, including the Sudan, seeking to weaken Saudi Arabia's position as custodian of Islam's holiest shrines in Mecca and Medina, and then gross interference in Israel's internal affairs and its conflict with the Palestinians. Erdogan is trying to present himself as a defender of the Palestinians and the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. This positioning is part and parcel of his desire to expand Turkey's activities and ultimately take over the Arab world. In recent years, tension among Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Bahrain, and the Emirates divided the Middle East into fronts. Turkey became a defender of Qatar along with Iran. This led to a covert war between Ankara and Riyadh that reached new heights. The Turkish army has bases in Qatar and protects both the emir and his land. This is a problem for the Saudis because if Turkey were not present, they would have the option of taking over Qatar. Ankara is thus standing in the way of a Saudi occupation. Some believe that through such actions, Erdogan is trying to steal the kingdom's role as defender of the Arabs, the Muslims, and their two holiest sites, which are both in Saudi territory. His popularity among Arabs is certainly high, especially when he is hostile to Israel. It should be noted that the Turkish army is considered the second strongest in the Middle East after Israel's. Erdogan is trying to have his cake and eat it too. He welcomes Muslim Brotherhood agitators who fled or were expelled from Egypt, but does not persecute the LGBT community in Turkey. Isn't that interesting? Even to the point that he permits sex change operations. I did not know that. He has attacked ISIS, but has also done business with it. He supports the Islamic movement within Israel, pours money into those who guard the Al-Aqsa Mosque and verbally attacks Israel and the IDF, but at the same time meets with influential Jewish American leaders and maintains full diplomatic relations with Israel. For its part, Israel imports close to $1 billion a year in goods from Turkey. Turkey aspires to be the head of the Sunni Muslim international community, but cooperates with Shiite Iran, the enemy of the Sunnis, which of course makes perfect sense in light of Bible prophecy, since Turkey and Iran will be partnering together with Russia and these other invaders, as you read in Ezekiel 38 and 39. You know, how does that happen? You know, how do Shiites and Sunnis, who generally pretty much hate each other, how do they get together? Well, but, you know, they hate Israel more. And they're equally evil? I don't know. Very interesting times we're living in. He opposes the Israeli occupation, quote-unquote, of the West Bank, though he himself is occupying parts of Syria and Cyprus and sending troops to Libya. He attacks the Europeans, but aspires to be part of Europe. He talks about freedom and democracy, but imprisons journalists by the hundreds. He wants to join the Muslim world, but commits war crimes against the Kurds, who are Muslim. Erdogan's policy is full of contradictions. Some say he is pragmatic. Others claim more aptly that he is hypocritical. He tries to please everyone at their own expense. Turkey does not need another mosque. The main reason for Erdogan's conversion of the Hagia Sophia was his desire to arouse Muslim passions for populist purposes in an Arab Islamic world longing for a fresh awakening. This was another move in Turkey's cooperation with Saudi Arabia for hegemony over the Sunni Muslim world. Interesting. Very interesting to me. Now, another article. How Europe is getting entangled in the big Middle East conflict. Very relevant, of course. This is from the European Union Observer, Cowart Debouf. And it says the First World War led to the end of the 600-year Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire, of course, was Turkish Muslim rule. Today, Turkey seems to be heading towards war with Europe again. Greece speaks war language, while Turkey says it will not compromise and instead continues its search for oil and gas in Greek-claimed waters in the eastern Mediterranean. This is not just another bilateral dispute between two neighboring countries. The picture is much bigger, and if Europe does not pay attention, it will become entangled in the nets of a growing conflict in the Middle East. In a way, the situation just before World War I was a mirror image of what we see around the Mediterranean today. And by the way, I should have mentioned this, all the articles that I've quoted from so far are secular. These are not Christian. Some are Jewish, you know, but they're secular Jewish and secular non-Jewish articles. Anyway, by 1914, European powers had united in two enemy alliances. Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Italy formed the Triple Alliance, while Great Britain, France, and Russia were part of the Triple Entente war against one of the countries meant war on the entire alliance. Today, there are two enemy alliances, too. Some might expect the two camps to be the Sunni versus Shiite Muslim nations, but it is, of course, much more complex than that. We talked a little bit about that just a minute ago. On the one hand, there is the Revolutionary Alliance of Turkey, Qatar, the Muslim Brothers, a regional movement, and Iran. On the other hand, we see the status quo entente of Saudi Arabia, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and Israel. The rivalry between these two blocs is no longer only playing out in the Middle East, but also increasingly in the Eastern Mediterranean as well, as the recent strife between Turkey and Greece shows. This is not about isolated incidents around a specific theme, such as gas or oil extraction, but about a complex conflict of interests in a broad theater that stretches from Greece and Libya to Iran. But it also is about black gold, because black gold matters, all right? So interesting. At the same time, we see that some European countries are clearly choosing sides and that they are tying their wagon to one of the alliances in the Middle East. France, Greece, and Cyprus support the status quo entente, while Spain and Malta seem more ready to support the Revolutionary Alliance, while Italy is jaywalking between the two, depending on the file. But before we delve deeper into this dangerous European connection, a little more explanation is needed about the Middle East alliances themselves. Revolution versus status quo. The origins of the Revolutionary Alliance go back to 1928, when the Muslim Brotherhood was founded to resist colonialist interference from Europe in the Middle East and the reestablishment of the Islamic Caliphate that had been abolished by Ataturk, a secularist. Of course, Ataturk was renowned and beloved in Turkey. I saw his pictures everywhere back in the day. I'm sure they've probably removed them by now. They looked with much sympathy at the Iranian Revolution in 1979. The Arab Spring of 2011 also seemed to bring the Muslim Brothers closer to power across the region. Qatar supported that trend, while Turkish President Erdogan became the leading example of how to successfully combine Islam and democracy. This brought Turkey, Qatar, the Muslim Brothers, and Iran into the same camp. For Saudi Arabia, on the other hand, the Arab Spring was a nightmare. The Saudis are terrified of instability in the Middle East, partly for economic reasons, and fear a revolution in their own country. The same goes for the Emirates, the UAE. When the current Egyptian president, Sisi, deposed the country's first elected Muslim brother, President Morsi, the status quo entente was born. The fact Erdogan continued to support the Muslim Brothers made Sisi and the Turkish president into sworn enemies. Israel, for its part, also prefers stability. There had been a peace agreement with Egypt since 1979. I mentioned Jordan and Egypt earlier. It also made peace with the Emirates on August 13 this year. This way, the link between Saudi Arabia, Egypt, the Emirates, and Israel is becoming increasingly clear. Some would argue that things are more complex than that. Just look at the war in Syria, where Iran and Turkey are on opposite sides. But despite the extra complexities, we still see both sides getting closer and getting more hostile towards each other. Turkey and Egypt are locking horns in Libya, where they each provide military support to supposing sides of the conflict. Another example is Qatar. When Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, and Egypt imposed a blockade on Qatar, in 2017, Turkey immediately sent 3,000 additional soldiers to the peninsula, while Iran opened its airspace to all Qatar Airways flights. Okay, we see the same alliances at work in the current escalation in the Eastern Mediterranean. Europeans taking different sides. The difference is that now European countries are also involved in these alliances. In order to facilitate oil exploration, Egypt forged maritime agreements with Greece and Cyprus, as well as Israel, while Turkey reached a rival accord with the official government in Libya. Both maritime deals are disputed by the other side. Turkey believes Egypt has no business in the waters around Crete and Cyprus, while Egypt does not want to see Turkish military ships off the coast of its neighboring country, Libya. As tensions run high between Greece and Turkey, two fellow NATO members, France is asking NATO and the EU for sanctions against Turkey. Spain, on the other hand, concluded a bilateral trade agreement with Turkey on July 27th, and trade talks are also underway with Italy. In Libya, Italy, Malta, and Turkey also decided to strengthen their cooperation. While Middle East countries sided with one of the two European alliances in World War I, European countries are now leaning towards two different camps in the Middle East. France, Greece, and Cyprus support the status quo entente, while Spain and Malta are cozying up with the revolutionary alliances, and Italy drifts between the two on a day-by-day or a case-by-case basis. This would be merely unfortunate and slightly problematic if it concerned just words and trade agreements. But the stakes are much bigger. A French frigate was targeted by a Turkish naval vessel in July when the latter was protecting a cargo bound for Libya. A Greek and a Turkish military ship collided on August 12th. France also sent frigates and fighter jets to Greece, while the Emirates sent two F-16s. And Egypt threatened military action against Turkey and Libya. Of course, as in 1914, none of these countries wants a great war. They only want to protect national interests, just as countries did in 1914. But if European nations break their unity and get caught up in a festering conflict, anything is possible again. This is very dangerous, Ataturk might have said. It is not clear which way we shall head. Ataturk, once again, of course, being the Turkish leader, the beloved leader back in the day. Now, I have time for one more article. This is from a strange-named site to me. It's called ekathimerina.com, and the author is unknown. It's from, 9/3/20, September 3rd, 2020. And the title is Turkey, Russia to hold live fire exercises in the Mediterranean. Turkey has announced that Russia will hold live fire naval exercises in the eastern Mediterranean amid escalating tensions between Turkey and its coastal neighbors, Greece and Cyprus, over rights to search for energy resources in the region. The navigational notice issued late Wednesday said the Russian exercises will take place September 8th through 22nd and September 17th through the 25th in areas of the Mediterranean where Turkish seismic research vessels are operating. It's unclear why NATO member Turkey would announce such drills on Moscow's behalf, but the two countries have in recent years significantly strengthened their military, political, and economic ties. That's interesting in light of Ezekiel 38 and 39. They are coordinating closely on their military presence in Syria while Turkey has purchased Russia's advanced S-400 missiles and has broken ground on a Russian-built nuclear power plant on its southern coast. Turkey has reacted angrily to the U.S. move that it said went against the spirit of alliance between Washington and Ankara. It also warned that it would harm efforts to unify Cyprus, which is split between Turkish Cypriot and Greek Cypriot communities. Turkish officials have also vowed to take steps to guarantee the security of a self-declared Turkish state in the island's north. Turkey's announcement comes at a time of increased friction between Turkey on the one side and Greece and Cyprus on the other side, on the other, over offshore energy exploration rights. Warships from Greece and Turkey have been shadowing each other in recent weeks as Turkish survey vessels and drill ships continue to prospect for hydrocarbons in waters where Greece and Cyprus claims exclusive economic rights. In Athens, Greek government spokesman Stelios Petsas said the planned Russian exercises were being monitored by all the countries in the region, as well as our NATO allies and the European Union partners. Cyprus split in 1974 when Turkey invaded following a coup by supporters of union with Greece. Turkey is the only nation to recognize a Turkish Cypriot Declaration of Independence, and it maintains more than 35,000 troops in northern Cyprus. So I suppose maybe I should end today's podcast the same way I ended it last week. Be with us next week for our next episode of Rumors of War or Stage Setting for Ezekiel 38 and 39. Thank you for being with us tonight. And God bless you all. Come quickly, Lord Jesus. Good night.